Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you're in HR and a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. How would this impact business? ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
A warning, this episode contains explicit language and racial slurs. Monique has had a storied career in entertainment. She's been a successful stand-up comedian, the star of a hit sitcom, a late-night talk show host, and an Oscar winner. But she's also had a contentious relationship with the industry and alleges she was blackballed for not playing by Hollywood's rules. In her candid new Netflix comedy special, My Name is Monique, she deconstructs her own public persona with keen observations about her childhood and family. She also reveals a long-held secret and, as always, keeps it very real. I'm Aisha Harris, and in this episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about the stand-up special, My Name is Monique.
Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you own a business, then suddenly a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. Would you add an extra shift, shift office hours, install those weird sleeping pod things? You can try to figure it out on your own or just get ADP. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything, even unexplainable cosmic events that end up granting humanity an extra hour a day. ADP. Always designing for people.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
Joining me today are co-hosts of the podcast Fanti, journalist Travell Anderson and journalist, writer, and producer Jarrett Hill. Welcome back, Travell and Jarrett.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk to you both about this because I know you have long histories with Monique and I've even interviewed her. So this is going to be a fun conversation.
I'm excited.
Yes. So My Name is Monique is Monique's latest stand-up special. In it, she looks back on various points in her life, like being put in special education in middle school and encountering a racist teacher, growing up with a queer aunt and uncle who were shunned by the rest of the family, and her relationship with her husband. She also opens up about her bisexuality. The special is presented as Monique's reintroduction to audiences after years of weathering negative publicity around her career. So a little background on Monique. She first broke out as the star of the hit sitcom The Parkers, which was a spinoff of Moesha, and in the stand-up film The Queens of Comedy. From 2009 to 2011, she hosted the late-night talk show The Monique Show, and in 2010, she won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her role in the movie Precious. Monique famously refused to do the kind of campaigning that's typically expected of Oscar nominees, and according to her, this led to her being labeled as difficult and effectively shut out of the industry for years. She also had a huge falling out with the film's director, Lee Daniels, that subsided only recently. And in 2019, Monique filed a discrimination lawsuit against Netflix for offering her a lowball deal for a comedy special in comparison to peers like Dave Chappelle and Amy Schumer. The case was settled for an undisclosed amount, and we don't know how much money Monique received for My Name is Monique, but it is streaming on Netflix now, so clearly something was a little cleared up there, or she got her bag.
She got something.
She got something. So, Travell, let me start with you and sort of just your initial impressions of My Name is Monique.
So I should say, Jared and I watched it together. I want to start with something positive and upbeat and fun and great, right? Because I love Monique and, you know, she is one of my favorites.
Not this preface. Not this preamble.
I know, right? I know. I hate myself. I know. My God. But I expected something different than what we got. Let me start there. So that might have been on me as a viewer, as a consumer. I wanted more than what we got, because I was thinking of this older version of Monique as a comedian, which we haven't seen much in public, right? Unless you were going to her stand-up shows across the country. We have no modern visual reference in a way of Queens of Comedy, in a way of I Could Have Been Your Cellmate, which is one of her other specials that I love. And so she's a different type of comedian now. which requires the audience, I think, to be different types of viewers of her content. But her special, it made me think. I did find it to be very revealing and an emotional journey, but I didn't have as many rollover, gut-wrenching, heavy Negro slap on the knee type of laughs like I'm used to with her comedy. Mm. That's what I will start with.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking forward to teasing that out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But Jarrett, let us know. What were your thoughts?
I was going to say, as the Negro slap on the knee comedy is, we did not cover that in our forthcoming book, Historically Black Phrases, available September 19th.
But yes, like, plug yourselves, plug yourselves.
But Travell said, I expected something different and then kind of eased into, I expected something more. I enjoyed it. I would say that, like, I enjoyed her storytelling. I mm-hmm. laughed and those different things, but it is definitely not what I was expecting. I was expecting more from a production value standpoint. That kind of was off-putting to me. I remember at the end having a very original thought that was completely mine first. I told Travell, I was like, I'm going to say that. Travell actually compared this a lot to Rathaniel, which...
oh my God, I had the same thought at the end of this.
Yeah, and so we actually did that episode here on Pop Culture Happy Hour talking about Rathaniel and and how it was a different kind of comedy special. This felt akin to that. And Travell talked about also just now saying how Monique is a bit different as a comedian now, but I actually think that's something that we see in a lot of comics that we've seen over the course of decades, right?
Sure, yeah.
If we think about Chris Rock, if we think about Dave Chappelle, if we think about, we see this happen a lot in men because men tend to have dominated in the way that we see in a lot of industry. But like when we've seen people in these roles for a long time, we kind of see them evolve or we see their politics kind of grow and change. We see them more comfortable with sharing parts of their story. I think we've seen comedy kind of start to change a bit, especially with like these people who've been out for a longer time, where we see them, you know, kind of approaching the comedy in a different kind of way that is more storytelling, that is more, that has a bit more of drama in the storytelling, if you will. So I enjoyed it. It's also not what I was expecting from a big, long time expected Netflix comedy special. It didn't feel like that for me.
Yeah, I kind of fell in the same place as you did. And I come at this special not as like a someone who's seen every one of her specials, but like she has been a part of my life as long, almost as long mm-hmm. as I can remember. I watched The Parkers. I watched Queens of Comedy. Of course, I saw Precious, although I saw it when it came out and I don't ever need to see it again. It's like one of those one and dones, not because of her performance, but just like, it's just too much. She's always been there. She's always been a reliable presence. If she pops up, you know, you're going to get at least 200 to 500 belly laughs in like a single scene. She is that person who shows up and she will give it 100%. I also thought she was like fantastic in Bessie, the HBO movie about Bessie Smith, and she played Ma Rainey. Beautiful performance. But I came out of this kind of feeling the same way where I didn't really laugh out loud much. Like I nodded my head a lot. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is interesting. I'm getting these stories. She's trying more than I think her peers are, like Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, to sort of like straddle this weird place of being a veteran comedian and sort of the old school comic view slash queens, kings of comedy era, and where we are now with comedy, where it's often a little bit more, it's a little bit less observational humor and more like storytelling and a lot of kind of like orators in a way, like telling stories and telling stories to have a like direct emotional, visceral impact. I think it worked sometimes. And then other times I felt that tension really, really kind of coming to the fore. I was like, I understand what she's saying, but is this still a little offensive to the people who she might be trying to reach and reach out to? I admire her for trying. And I think that she at heart is very empathetic and she cares about the people. If she doesn't like you, she's going to say it. But if she does have respect for you, she's going to say it. But she might not be like the perfect messenger in some people's eyes. I think that it's really interesting to see her at this moment because like unlike someone like Chappelle or Chris Rock, like she seems to be really kind of trying to bring herself into the current sort of comedic landscape while maintaining so much of what makes her who she is. Because the humor is still very broad, you know?
Absolutely. I actually think the special is yet another example of how great Monique is at physical comedy.
You ever notice how a hippopotamus bitch walk? Do you ever notice how when that bitch walks, she always walk like, nigga, come get it. Nigga, I'm ready, nigga. So when my husband say to me, bring that hippopotamus over here, nigga, come get it.
But also, you know, if you're ever familiar with anything that Monique has done, you know that she, as a fat Black woman, is a woman who uses her body in the course of how she tells her jokes, how she tells her storytelling, even in these many roles that you've already listed. Her physicality is so important to the work that she does. And I do think that that still shines. But that note that you make about her and folks who come from the generation of comedy that she comes from, figuring out some more successful than others, how to maintain that core, but also exist in this current world, is a super interesting one, because I do think she is a lot more successful at having these conversations around identity and these conversations around what she's doing, you know, with her current marriage. And she's doing it in a way that old school comedians do. You mentioned Comic View, and I'm glad you made that very specific Black comedy reference, because it's important here, mm-hmm. right? In terms of the style of Monique, right? But then there's also this more emotionally charged, slower pace, you know, storytelling thing that does feel different than, you know, her idol, as she talked about in one of the promo bits they released in advance, Richard Pryor, and his comedy style.
I want to figure out if we're being fair to her or not, because I think that while I expected more funny, more this, more that, I also want to acknowledge that Monique has shown us throughout her career that she's more than a stand-up.
Yeah.
That she's an actress, that she has a real worldview and a perspective. And so I don't know that the intention may have been, right, for it to just be hysterical laughs, one after another, after another, after another, after another. And I also am intrigued by the piece that you brought up, Aisha, about offense.
Oh, yes.
Monique, in this, she has a conversation around special education that's interesting. And mm-hmm. like, she comes to it from a place of being a person who was in special education. And so I think that for her and some others, it gives her an authority to be able to speak about it in a different way than someone who's mm-hmm. not. There's a word that she uses, right?
A word.
And I was like, oh. Mm-hmm. She was actually able to use this word in a way that I think, right, is not going to be painful for people to hear. I was intrigued by that. And I think that a lot of comics are always trying to figure out how to be able to say something they're not supposed to be able to say, or yeah. to kind of push an envelope a little bit. And sometimes they do it well, and sometimes they don't. I think we've seen Dave Chappelle really do a poor job of that. And I'm intrigued to see how people are going to respond to Monique in that specific instance as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was kind of the exact thing I was thinking about when I thought about really kind of walking that fine line between, you know, being, I don't know if the word is respectful, but like, an offense feels so like limiting as well. Actually, let me just play a short clip of that story that she's telling. And she's actually talking about a girl in her special ed class who, her name was Elizabeth, and she wore a helmet. She's talking about hearing Elizabeth laugh for the first time, and she actually does the laugh, and she didn't realize she was laughing. So let's hear a little clip of her describing Elizabeth.
But when she took the helmet off, she could speak as clear as you and I. She just had no control of her motherfucking neck.
And then you can't see it, but Monique is actually doing mm-hmm. an impression of Elizabeth and her neck rolling all over the place. And she does this mm-hmm. for like a good 5 to 10 seconds. Like, it just like goes on and on. You know, I think 25, 30 years ago, if she or another comic had done something like that, it would have come from maybe a weirder place, or a place that feels a little more uncomfortable, or it would have felt as though she was punching mm-hmm. down. I wasn't sure how to feel about it, and I'm still parsing it through, but I also realized, like, it doesn't matter how I feel about it. But I'm curious to hear how people who actually are disabled, and, you know, I'm curious about how they feel about it. I haven't seen anything yet, but I do think I can see the argument for why there is, like, Monique is doing this in a way that doesn't feel hurtful. Or might not feel hurtful, if that makes sense.
I don't know what Elizabeth thinks about these jokes. Monique does go on to say, we've been friends since middle school, and I love her, and she's a person that seems to be in Monique's life. But I don't know how Elizabeth feels about the jokes, and I don't know how the general public, who kind of fits into that category, would feel about it as well. So that's something that I'll be interested to see in coming days and weeks, how people are talking about it, if they're talking about it at all.
I also just want to throw out one thing that just, you know, ticked me off. And it's less about her performance and more about, this kind of gets at the point you mentioned earlier, Jared, about the production quality, I guess. The editing on her special is disrespectful. By which I mean, there are moments in which you can easily tell that, like, oh, she probably went on, you know, another 45 seconds or whatever with something, but the way they cut it, it felt abrupt. They've inserted in really weird places laughter and shots of the audience that, for me and my viewing experience, took me out of it just a little bit. I was just like, oh, it showed a little bit of the seams.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are other specials that I've seen, you know, that editing that happens for all specials, right, just feels better elsewhere. And it just, it kept nagging at me every time. There was a joke about something deeply Black that happened on screen, and they flashed to a white person in the audience, and it felt off to me. So I was like, that awareness wasn't present in this special. And because of the specificity of Monique's Blackness, which informs everything that she tells us in this story, that felt off to me.
Can I just touch on that a little bit? Because I think there's also something interesting in some stuff that ain't our business, right? Like, this point about the production value and the editing and all that kind of stuff really makes me want to know what happened in that settlement. But I'm curious about what that settlement how that settlement may have impacted the special, because I have a hard time believing it didn't.
Yeah.
I'm like, it just felt like there was not the budget there that we see in other specials that even feel adjacent. I think about Hannah Gadsby, for instance, her special Nanette on Netflix. That felt like a high production value event. Chris Rock just did this live special that was a unique special moment for Netflix. That felt like it had a lot of money behind it. And for an event that has been years in the making now, I was a little underwhelmed with that much development for the audience, right? To have been waiting for this for so long. Monique asking us to protest a number of years ago and, you know, really speaking about how much money these other people were getting. It just made me wonder about how that settlement impacted this actual special.
Well, you have to wonder if maybe it's just she got all the money and then they were like, we're going to shirk on the production values. I also felt as though the transitions weren't always very smooth and like left me a little confused.
Yeah.
And there were cuts. Like, I noticed the cuts. So it wasn't like she herself necessarily was the one who didn't have the strong transitions. It was just the way it was cut.
Yeah.
All of that aside, I kind of want to go back to the Rathaniel aspect of it, because I will say that, like, what I admire about her sort of coming out in a way, in a very unqualified way about her bisexuality, is the fact that she also takes the church to task and really kind of calls the church out, like, and I say the church, like the Black church, just which is many denominations, but generally speaking, just like the Black church that we, as we understand it, the Black American church, in the same way that Rathaniel and Jerrod Carmichael did. And I'm wondering, like, are we having a moment now, to some extent, where we have Black public figures, especially Black queer public figures, who are kind of reckoning with their relationship to the church and its effect? Is this something that's like, do you feel as though we're having a moment, or we're like on the precipice of having a moment? Because I do think it's interesting within a year span to see these two big comedians, one older, one younger, old school, new school, kind of reckoning with the church in a way that 15, 20, like for years would not be embraced in the way that it might be today.
I've been saying for a while now that I'm really interested in the studies that will come out in 2030 and 2035 about what 2020 did to us as people, right? Not just as Black people, but as human beings, and what depression looked like, what anxiety looked like, what our faith looks like, right? And how we show up in the world. I think what you're talking about could be a result of the pandemic, because so many people have had so much time in the house reflecting on, you know, their lives and their faith and their education and the way that they think about themselves and their families and all kinds of different things. And I can say personally, I've had that experience, right? My own relationship with church specifically has been very up and down and storied, while my experience of faith has been a little bit more steady. I actually think that it probably has something to do with the ways that the pandemic has kind of given us time to sit with these things. And now we're kind of starting to see the fruits of that.
I mean, I think that could be it. I think a person like Monique, as she has said in this special, she feels like she was born with this secret of her sexual identity, right? That she had to keep a secret. The sociocultural shifts that happened from the point in which she was born to where we are now, and maybe perhaps where she was when she, you know, made that declaration to her husband, who, just quick side note, what Monique articulates in this special about the reasons why she calls her husband daddy, you know, what she sees as her place as the wife of a Black man, you know, all of that respectability, you know, deeply problematic, like old wave, you know, feminism, white feminism type stuff that she's articulating was like, my God, today. But, you know, that's just a...
That's what I meant about straddling that line between, like, comic view and...
It was really weird.
Wherever we're at now.
It was really weird. But... but she's at a place both personally, and then we as a world, right, are at a place differently than we were when she started, where she feels like she can say this, you know, not only publicly, but also in a special that she knows a whole lot of people are going to watch because of all of the publicity and whatnot around it, versus a Gerard Carmichael's experience, which has a little bit of that, but definitely not as much. And so I am hopeful that we will begin to have more conversations like this in this way with folks who are at, you know, this level of visibility. But I will just note, most often the people who do end up taking to task, you know, the church for the ways in which it treats, you know, LGBTQ people are more often the LGBTQ people. We need the straight people, the cis people, but we need them to start commenting about the ways in which it has also negatively impacted their lives as cis people and straight people to see how they treat LGBTQ people. But hopefully, perhaps, you know, this is a start or a restart, perhaps, right, to this particular conversation.
Yeah. No, I think both of your points make so much sense to me. And as a straight person who didn't grow up in the church, but did have family members of the church, I do feel... Now I feel some sort of obligation.
Yes, you're the problem, Aisha. You are the problem.
I'm the problem. All right, working on myself after we finish this conversation. Oh, man. So before we leave and I go and get myself straight about how I need to call the church
out. Not straight.
Sorry. You know what I meant. I'm curious, like, where do you think Monique goes from here?
It may not sound like it, but I love Monique, like, a lot. I own Fat Girls, okay? Which, if you don't know what Fat Girls is, it was one of her movies, which actually talks a lot about the experiences that she was having in real life around her body and fashion and whatnot. I used to watch her. She had a beauty pageant for Fat Girls back in the day called Monique's Fat Chance on Achichin. I used to love that show. Anyway, so I really love her, and I think that she's a fabulous talent that has a lot more range than people give her credit for. I want to see her on screen as much as she wants to be on screen because she's great at it. And I look forward to where the comedy specifically goes from this reintroduction period. I'm along for the ride because she deserves a whole lot more and better than the culture has given her. And so I'm looking forward to it. I hope we see greatness even more so after this.
I'm rooting for Monique. You asked, does it feel like a reset? It didn't. Not in the way that I wanted it to, but I think it may have been. Her having a restored relationship with Lee Daniels, which we actually saw on social media a number of months ago, the two of them on stage having a moment of reconciliation and like publicly, you know, displaying that. I think Monique is one of the most talented people in the industry, and I think she's demonstrated that, and I think the Oscars recognize that, and I think that, you know, her work has reflected that. I'm really curious to see what she wants to do next. I would love to see her in more roles where we get to kind of see her express her brilliance in the various different ways that it shows up. It didn't feel like the landmark moment I was looking for, but I'm hopeful that it was indeed.
Yeah. I'm rooting for her too. I want to see her all over the place. I would love to see her in like a Knives Out movie. Like, I think she would be great in that sort of environment. I don't know, put her in an episode of Grand Crew or something. Mm. At the very least, having some sort of reconciliation with Netflix, I think, will hopefully help her get to that point. If that's what she wants. Whatever she wants. I just want her to do what she wants.
Whatever she wants, yes.
Well, we want to know what you think about Monique's special. My name is Monique. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Travelle Anderson, Jarrett Hill, thanks so much for being here. It was great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us back.
And this episode was produced by Hafsa Fatima and Candace Lim and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about the new Nicolas Cage film, Renfield.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.
Jasmine Morris here from the StoryCorps podcast. Our latest season is called My Way, stories of people who found a rhythm all their own and marched to it throughout their lives. Consequences and other people's opinions be damned. You won't believe the courage and audacity in these stories. Hear them on the StoryCorps podcast from NPR.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.